I am actually rather tired. I got up before 5 this morning and visited a Chennai tip site, garbage dump, in the early morning for several hours. And I arrived here only about half an hour ago. I just go to that because in the very early morning I was standing in a 12-acre tip site, standing on about 50 years of Chennai garbage, which in the last 3 years, Pichandikulam team has transformed into a rather beautiful tropical dry evergreen forest. We can also show some of the work that we are now doing outside of Oroville. Maybe a contentious point, controversial point. Sometimes it is an issue, and maybe it brings up that question that comes to Orovillians, perhaps from the secretary or perhaps from somebody else: what are you doing all this work outside of Oroville? And to be frank, that in these last years, a part of our work has been reaching out, taking the Oroville experience out to whether the bioregion or the villages nearby or even further afield. And now we're working quite solidly right in the middle of this incredible mess called Chennai. We're there because the people of Chennai, who run Chennai, actually a few years ago invited some Orovillians to a meeting, and they said, look, Oroville is a great place, but it's a little bit hidden. It's behind the trees, and you've got to go down that path, and you can't find it, and there's no signs, and God. But it's a wonderful place, we know it. There's all sorts of experiences. Would you be willing to bring the best of Oroville to the middle of Chennai? It was quite an interesting way to start a meeting. And that's, in a way, what a group of Orovillians have been doing. So I think it is relevant, this moving out, this sharing with this wonderful country, the state of Tamil Nadu and this country of India. I think it's healthy. I was living in the village of Kulapalyam. We'd built a little hut where the dental clinic is, next to the community kitchen that we'd built. And we're talking about almost 40 years ago. The first community kitchen came down in the cyclone. We rebuilt it. Opposite the community kitchen was a dance theater in the open air. 35 years ago, the Kulapalyam village would come, and I remember performing with friends the Katha Upanishad of Sri Aurobindo in the open, near to the tamarind trees, near to Vedi's house. I was Yama, I think. Yeah. We built some of the first small houses just near to there for the integrated families, the families that were chosen by the mother to be part of Oroville in probably 67, 68. I remember using a tire, a car tire, to make a round window in a mud hut. You remember? It was Narsingh himself. And the astonishment of the village to see this round window appearing. What was this innovation? It was playful at that time. Perhaps more playful. There were perhaps less rules. And I think from the beginning, that's what we understood. She said, look, here's a place. It happens to be an empty plateau. It's your playground. Will you play? Please use your imagination, your intuition. In those same years, in Kulapalyam, as we built the first structures, the community kitchen, the television studio, a friend of mine was one of the first video freaks from New York. He had a video recorder, like an old tape recorder, spool. Great big cameras. He just comes straight from New York through Paris, where I knew him. He came here. And we used to take pictures of Auroville and take it to the mother. She saw images of Auroville on this wonderful first video record. She loved video. She just loved video. We had this series, when you pointed the camera at the screen, you got these ever-changing mandalas. And I remember her being really excited by this. She would think it was like the new consciousness manifesting on this. It was extraordinary. She wanted us to build a video studio, which is in the place where Orolek is, and I built it. It used 60 feet long Casuarina poles. It had thatch roof. And the purpose was to build a studio that produced savatry. And that would be beamed through the American satellites to all the Indian villages. And Auroville would be a beginning of a node of education for rural India. Nandini Satpati, Indira Gandhi, they were all behind this. Of course, Indira was coming down to Pondicherry to meet the mother. Then we had a problem because we had the Indo-Pak War. America sort of backed the Pakistan side. And immediately that project of this using the satellites got shelved. But we built the studio and it was opened by Roger and the French television with thousands of little oil lamps, this big thatch, Casuarina bamboo and thatch studio to produce savatry. It didn't become a studio, it became the Tibetan home. Shradavan and Rod moved in with 13 Tibetan children. Tashi, she is still here, of course, in the second generation. While we built these structures, I remember getting a message from the main office in Pondicherry, the beach office, the famous beach office where Shamsunda and the organization was giving us instructions, permissions, and it said, look, the American ambassador is coming tomorrow. Please, could you put on some clothes? We were sort of dressed like local people with our little sort of lungis and whatever. And there was a lot of very elegant buttocks. High up on bamboo roofs, people like Johnny and myself. It was fun. As we learned how to build houses, we learned some Tamil, luckily. We felt the wind blow. And that's important, to know which way the wind blows. Yeah, whether it comes from the southeast or whether it blows from the northwest. And you go through some cyclones, and we did. We had a cyclone in 72. Yeah, in 72 it blew the... We had a cyclone in 72 because Pichandikulam, which I started at the beginning of 73, was the first houses were built out of cyclone damage material from aspiration. We went down and collected all the broken bits of this and that and recycled them into some huts that we built in the middle of this empty field down here. And that's how we started. A group of Harijan boys from Irinjavati joined with a few other people, particularly from Irinjavati and some from Kulapalya, and we sort of set up camp and just started the process of fencing to protect from the goats and the cows, the process of collecting seeds and starting a nursery. And we've had a nursery in Pichandikulam since then. Now for 35 years more, there's always been a nursery here, growing plants. And that first season, at the end of 73, before the mother passed away, we started planting our first trees. It was then about 35 acres. You know, Oroville belongs to nobody in particular, blah, blah. That sense, recalling that sense of those early years. I think generally people just brought and gave, and I know for myself, what little I had in Australia, maybe an insurance policy or a bit in a bank somewhere, I just asked my parents to liquidate it and bring it here because this was it. We were here. There was no question. And every bit of energy we had, we brought here. I remember bringing probably quite a sizable amount of money then and putting it on Shamsunda's table and saying, look, we need to buy another few acres of land to make Pichandikulam whole. And it went into the pot and it was bought for maybe 2,000 rupees an acre. Yeah? 2,000 rupees an acre. Now it is 35 lakhs an acre. Changing times. But I just... at that time, it was a time when there wasn't any question. It wasn't that this was a project that we were here for a few years and we'd go off and live in France or somewhere else. I mean, this was it. My parents thought I was completely insane, and I'd lost my mind, which perhaps I had, because perhaps it's a very important thing to lose your mind or at least part of it if you're coming to Oroville. But at the same time, we were very practical. This was practical. This was... it was not all easy. If you look at the feet of Oroville green belters, you will then understand. I recommend looking at Yarp's feet or Johnny's feet. You could look at my feet too. Our legs, the scars... I say this because it was a very real thing. There were a lot of physical troubles in those first years. I was in hospital several times. The mother sent me to a nature cure clinic south of here at one point. You go and don't eat coconut water for 3 months or something like that. And I think 3 months I was completely detoxifying. But I say that because, yeah, somehow the mother was like that. That was in, I think, 71. She through Shamsunda, whatever, there are all sorts of personal carings. Many of us We were refugees from the 60s. Many of us were seriously on, let's say, detox, mentally, yeah, physically. We've been traveling a lot. I'd been traveling and working overseas for several years after leaving Australia when I was about 20. I left because I had to make a decision about whether to go and shoot people in Vietnam, which I didn't feel was a very good idea, having been brought up a Quaker in Australia and the basic thing of I didn't want to go and fight the war for the Americans, but I was chosen, you know, ballot, conscription, blah, blah. I escaped. So I left my law degree and other things and went to Europe. And I lived in France for several years, which was actually quite interesting because I lived in France and Ethiopia and Turkey and a few other places, but I worked for 2 years in a French psychiatric clinic. And I always felt that the mother was giving me a preview to the movie. Sort of. This is what it's going to be like. Because later I found that in spite of all the problems, I could understand the predominantly French aspect of our beloved community. And having trained in a psychiatric clinic, it was quite useful. Are you recording this? Oh dear. I was terrified that you would ask that question. Then we'll get personal. Maybe we touch on it in a little while. Yeah? We'll try. I was in Paris in May 68. I was sort of, you could say, fighting on the barricades with Cohn Bendit and everybody else. Those months of 68, which was so extraordinary. So extraordinary. When we felt that new world being born, that possibility, in an absolutely tangible way in the middle of Paris. That magic of those few months where the whole thing collapsed, the society collapsed, and something new was coming in. And this is 3 months after Aurevu was founded. I knew about the mother, but I didn't really know about Aurevu then. But after May 68 collapsed in itself, when de Gaulle came in with the tanks and our friends were banged and raped and killed sometimes, etc., there was a dangerous point. In Europe, if you stayed in Europe, you would have become involved in very complicated groups, Red September or blah, blah, you know. Or, like so many, they left. They backed off, almost like a Tai Chi. Okay, this is really too hard to confront General de Gaulle and his tanks, to confront the society which had come down on top of this vision, this top of this opening, and banged it hard. Many of us withdrew and say, let's go inside. The work is inside. It was almost like, generally, a society thinking like, in a way, Aurobindo, when he had that decision, shall I go on fighting or do I go inside? The work is inside too. So many left for South America or India or the gardens of the south of France or Australia, and started that journey of perhaps helping the planet too. At the end of 69, I'd been living in India for a year in Tiruvannamalai at Ramana Maharshi Ashram in the north, in a little village, a little Brahmin village in the mountains, partly in a cave, partly growing a garden. And then I came here, absolutely by chance. I'd heard about Auroville, but I was actually rather tired of India. I'd sat at the feet of many wise people on the Ganges or different ashrams and heard it all about Vedanta and this and that. But it seemed like practical, physical India was having a lot of trouble. It was getting dirtier and worse, badly designed, and the care for matter was not there. And something in my head said, you go to Japan, you know, the Zen monastery, let's see some order. That was my way of thinking. And I was in Kerala, and I wanted to come to Chennai, get a boat, and go to Japan. But in this dream, canal, a woman spoke to me and said, look, you just come by Pondicherry. So I got a train, I got to the station in Pondicherry, and walked up from the station up the main, the front there, and I met a friend. She was on a bicycle, this American lady, the wife of my video-making friend. And Diane said, oh, hi, Joss, just come to the Charlie Chaplin movie at the ashram. And I thought, wow, okay, this is an interesting ashram. And we got to the playground, and of course they wouldn't let me in. The playground is very strict, and I probably looked like a bit of a wandering, character. And that evening I remember adjourning with some friends to the India Coffee House on Nehru Street. It was about the only place that was on Nehru Street, you know, a coffee house. There were no restaurants, there was nothing. And sitting there around a table and listening to these insane people, these Aurovillians, these ashram people building Auroville, with these dreams and talking about this lady, you know, who has just had this vision of something absolutely new and remarkable. And all these people had bright red feet or dark red feet from the Auroville mud. I was very impressed, very, very impressed. It was a time of dreams. And somehow, yeah, it was not difficult. I actually stayed in Pondicherry for 3 months before even coming to Auroville. Interesting. Just sitting in the ashram library, reading, talking to Prem Malik, meeting the people in the ashram, working in the dining room, working at Equals One with Yvonne and Medananda, and just feeling this ashram presence. It's a lot simpler then, a lot simpler. You know, you had herds of pigs running up and down Nehru Street. There were a few cars, literally. Big Citroën, you know, huge old Citroën cars. A much simpler life. And we started coming to Auroville, and then the process of talking to the Auroville office and giving one's photograph for the mother to see, and then the mother directly accepted you to be part of Auroville, and then moving to Forecomers right at the beginning and building a little hut there, and then building a little hut on the beach. Newcomers should go to Forecomers. you took your water, you know, on the back of your bicycle from up at Certitude, where there was some water, down to, because there was not even water there at the time. But forecomers, at that time, forecomers, we had a Bob and Deborah who started forecomers in 1968, at the same time as Frederick and Sharma started Certitude. Bob and Deborah, Bob was a New York artist. Deborah was a dancer. And the first thing they built in this middle of these canyons and the cashew top was a theater. Amazing theater. It was like a big bird. And the playfulness of the Oroville architecture at that time was extraordinary. In one of the first cyclones, many of those buildings came down. But it didn't matter. You built them again. They were thatched houses. Bob painted some of the houses, the thatch actually, different colors, bright blue or bright red. It was quite fun. We were growing crops, the indigenous grains. Even at that time, Bob was growing algae, chlorella. At one point, for about 6 months, he was only living off some ragi, chlorella, and his own urine. Then it was very fashionable, because the Prime Minister of India, Morarji Desai, was also into urine therapy. This is, right, the beginning of aspiration, but you've seen these pictures, but you could see the sea in the background. We could see the sea from Pichandikulam. In 73, at one point, we were very much into Buckminster Fuller and growing, making all sorts of domes and things like that, geodesic domes. I made a big sphere out of aluminium as a part of an element to live in. And one night, there was a big wind. And the next day, we had to find that ball, this aluminium ball, near to the beach. It rolled from here with the wind, from here all the way to the beach. From the beginning, we were not botanists or horticulturalists. We learnt about the plants. We walked out of Oroville and found the remnant forests, and we learnt what was the indigenous vegetation. And that indigenous vegetation, we started to get to know its names, get to know its when the seeds were ready. We'd bring the seeds back and we'd plant them. And this was the beginning of this awareness of the tropical dry evergreen forest. And this forest is the rarest ecosystem in India. It's almost, you could say, it was extinct. There's only a few little patches left. Because this area, we were aware too how old it was. We were digging for Machamandia, and we came across the burial urns, the big circles of stones where the megalithic Dravidians had lived, right in the center. We found Roman remnants inside of Oroville. We know about the Roman port just south of Pondicherry. I understand that there was a Roman, probably, watchtower at the center of Oroville. They probably looked out to see the boats coming, you know, bringing the next bottle of Chianti or something like that. Yeah? But this is, it's an old place. And that's only a few thousand years ago. Megalithic Dravidians before that. I understand the Egyptians, the Etruscans, the Carthaginians, they were all here. It was the pearling capital of the world. The straits between here and Sri Lanka. People came for the fine wood, for the ebony, for the food, for the spices. And that's why it's worn out. Coasts are always the edges. They're the places where people come to first. The mountains, the top of the mountains, are the last bits. The Western Ghats are still green and fairly pristine in some areas. But down on the coast, everyone came here. Marco Polo wandered through, 1500. He described the people of here, of this Coromandel coast. He said, so beautiful. They were so beautiful, and they actually hardly wore any clothes. They just covered themselves in jewels. You read Marco Polo's travels. Then finally, I remember Dumanbhai from the ashram explaining how they used to come out to the Auroville Plateau to get their firewood. And I shuddered. I thought it's karmic that now the Aurovillians have to come and plant trees where the ashram actually came and maybe took the trees for their firewood. There were small forests 50 years ago, 60 years ago, up here on the plateau. The plateau of Auroville would have been covered by the plant that the mother, the flower of which called the miracle, Memsalon. Clearly, a beautiful blue flower. And this is another aspect that from the beginning, we knew the plants through the mother's names. We were not botanists. We only discovered Mr. Linnaeus a few years later almost. All that botany, and then later proper botanists came and helped us. But those first years, we were planting transformation or psychological perfection or realization or miracle. And it was very, very sweet. It was really sweet. And the ashram botanists, people like Richard, these wonderful characters who are still there, Tarachand. Tarachand was the ashram gardener who made many of the beautiful gardens of the ashram. These were our teachers. And we had the mother's flower book, even the first flower book. And of course, we were taking flowers to the mother. I remember the last time I met the mother, and it was my birthday. And you know, mother, she in those darshans, 71, 72, sometimes a message would come out and say, you stay in Auroville. Much better to stay in Auroville to work. You don't need to come to darshan. And this birthday, I remember I was working here, and my God, I was late, you know, and I cycled into Pondy, sweaty, stinking probably, and covered with mud. And I got there late, the bottom of the stairs, and Champakla was there and sort of, you know, a bit angry, and what is this, you're coming late? And he let me up, and so I was late, and so everybody had gone home, which is the best time, yeah? So then you go. If you calculate it right and Champakla let you in, then you could sit quietly. And I'd taken the flower of the Katamanika. Katamani? Katamani. Katamani is our fencing plant. It's an ajatropha. It's one of the commonest plants. It'll grow anywhere. The goats don't eat it, nothing like that. Yeah, it's a really strong plant. We're planting it on the fences to keep as a protection for our plantation. So this tiny flower, it's very, very sweet. And I took this to the mother, and everybody else, you know, the room was full of huge hibiscus and roses and all this sort of thing. And here I turn up with this tiny little, she said, les chèvres n'aiment pas ça. She said, the goats don't like that one. It was rather nice. The goats don't like that one, yeah. So, but, you know, she was there and we were here, but it was not a big distance. It was quite incredible, that presence. And if she said, look, you don't have to come and to darshan if you don't want to. You stay and work. I mean, that's actually more important. I remember one message, you stay in Auroville. I want you to stay in Auroville and work. You don't have to come to darshan. Strong. It was those years that in 71 we were we were going at 6 o'clock in the morning with crowbars and to dig the beginning of the foundation for Matra Mandir. That was funny. Just a few people. There was some that, one guy, Kenneth, he just got out of a New York jail. He was a bohemian, wonderful poet. Kenneth, who lived here, yeah? Wonderful poet, yeah. And his language was sometimes very colorful. And I'm not going to say it now, but you got asked for the crowbar in a particular way. And another, Henry Bell, he sang hymns nonstop. So Matra Mandir worksite was full of New York jail talk and hymns, Christian hymns, and wonderful devotion. Yeah. So we learned this about the vegetation in this area. We started growing the forest. We learned also that the vegetation was used by people. And in our travels on bicycle or bullock cart, we met the Natavaityas, or the village people who still used the... They made brooms out of this, or they made their roofs out of this, or they made their fish baskets out of that, and they made all this incredible medicine. And so that knowledge... It started moving towards a documentation, and that moved to our interest in medicinal plants. And so it's about nearly 20 years ago that we started working particularly on medicinal plants, the medicinal plants of South India. And now there's some 600 medicinal plants here. Here in Pichanigon we've got about 800 species. It's a bit of a botanical garden. And gradually people have seen what we're doing and they say, well, could you help us in our school or our institution or our Chennai? And so we go and help that way. There's two things. I mean, first of all, Nadukupom, because this is part of our story that about for these last decades, we've been working out in the so-called bioregion. We've been working in many villages. We've been documenting the villages, creating bioresource registers, having programs of planting or working with women's group. But 5 years ago, we said, look, we're a bit tired of working in many villages. Let's concentrate on one. So 30 kilometers from here is a village called Nadukupom. 5 years ago, we approached a village that we knew and we were working anyway, and the village says, yeah, great, we've got a couple of acres, we can add it on to the school, and you can build your environment education center there. We like to do models. We like to do places where people can then maybe see and copy. I can't talk about forestation out there unless I've got this behind me, over my shoulder. Yeah, and if people can come here, then they can see, oh, these guys, they do know something about making a forest. Because the forest's here. And so we wanted to make a center there out in the village, in a very ordinary village. In a high school, we found afterwards, it was the worst school in Tamil Nadu. It had 550 kids. It got 10% pass rate. It had two trees, 5.5 teachers who turn up sometimes, no water, and of course no toilets. Difficult on the pupils and the teachers and whatever. It was hell. Planted with the children, started vegetable gardens to help with their nutrition program. The Nadukupom Village Community Center, this is in the middle of the village, common land. We've just built a community hall for about 25 lakhs. This is Satprem Design, UNDP funds, the Village Information Center. What we're trying to create is an information center where the villagers have access to all their the relevant information. You could explain, but I'm not going to ask you to, but he's the hero of that. He's running part of the GIS team. We've got GIS mapping out in that village where you can click on the village map on a house, you can see a picture of the house, you know who lives there, their education status, their health status. You can click on a bore well, you can know about that bore well. You can click on a field, you can know what crops grew there for the last years. This is information, roads, important people, leprosy, TB, all this is coming into a village map towards so the villagers can plan their future. That's the team is four people working from Pichandikulam, but out in that village and six other villages nearby. This is a women's meeting house. We have, I think, four of them in the villages out there. We have 35 women's groups. That's microcredit and all this working with IGP programs, etc. We have a farmers group, organic farming. Yeah, the women's group, it's fascinating seeing them sitting in the evening doing global warming programs. Here, that's in the Harijan colony, the colony in Nadukupam. We're just planning the Balwadi, the creche, which now is in its last days of completion. That was months ago. We formed a small trust because the FMC and Oroville did not want to get involved out there. So we formed a legal trust. They said, look, you form your own trust. We formed a trust and bought land. We bought land at that time. It was 1.5 to 2 lakhs an acre. We've got altogether now about more than 30 acres of land. This is the field where we've got spirulina production. The women's group sort of organizing the spirulina. It's growing to be a nutrition drink for the school children. Undernourished children, we did their weight and height and hemoglobin with PIMS and the Oroville Health Center. And then we give them a nutrition drink in the morning and the afternoon to the undernourished kids in about four schools. These are activities that Pichandikulam Forest does out there. All these women have been to Pichandikulam. We bring the women to Oroville on toilet tours. So instead of temple tours, we now get them on toilet tours. It's important for people to see toilets that work in the village or in Oroville places, whatever. Then you can persuade people that toilets are a good idea. Then we get back and we make toilets with them, with their contribution to that work. Toilet and bathroom with tiles, with pakka. Here, the women, the part of our team and the women's group are preparing herbal medicine for a cattle camp. We don't only have people camps, and we have those regularly. Every few months, we beat the village gong or drum in the evening, announce that tomorrow in this village there's going to be a herbal medicine camp. Special doctors come, experts, and they treat villages from many villages together, hundreds of people. But this one is for the animals. The balls in that last picture are being thrust down the throats of the animals. After you grab hold of the tongue of the bullock, you have to hold the tongue and push the ball down. It's full of very good herbs to make the animals healthy or increase the milk, etc. Old tested ancient remedies. That's the sort of thing we're doing. Pichandikulam has about 100 people working with it. Whether you say salaried or supportive, some of them are Orovillians or whatever, but it's about 100 people. Let's have a cup of tea, yeah?